32 outside. I'm Susan Saunders. I am joined with Rudy and Rudy today of Kingston Wealth Management. You know John Rudy, but occasionally we get the pleasure of Chris Rudy. And we have no Kevin Kingston today because he is surveying fish.
He's underwater. He's underwater looking at fish, though.
So. He is fish counting, yeah. And I am jealous of him.
In a much warmer place.
In a much, much wonderful environment as a scuba diver. Yeah. It brings peace and relaxation. But I bet you he still checked all the numbers three times this morning.
Yeah, knowing Kevin, he hasn't been far away from his phone and looking at things, I'm sure. Although his family might have something to say about that.
Well, I do have questions to ask as we have our Kingston Wealth Management conversation every Wednesday, and the market's been going up and down and sideways, but one of the things I knew was going to happen today was going to be a little volatility, because I was told by a newscaster that overnight the markets had dropped significantly, and we were going to be opening down today. Chris, I don't understand how that happens. We stop trading at a certain time. We start trading again the next day. Who's doing what in the overnight?
Well, we stop trading here, but then continue on elsewhere around the world. And then actually, there's what you can do is called pre-market trading. It's not as common. There's not nearly as many trades. But there's actually, you can trade U.S. securities before the opening bell that I think most people are familiar with. So we kind of know we have a trend on the way things that are going to open. So then when our normal trading opens up at about 8 o'clock every day, usually that first order that's processed is somewhat either significantly higher or lower if we've got a big futures market or if we've got a lot of pre-market trading that's moved things one way or the other. So
that means professional traders must never get any good night's sleep.
Well, there's certain times. I've got friends who are traders who, depending on when markets can tend to be volatile like this, will be up for a number of hours, yeah, because you can, if and not everybody does that, and most people don't need to do that, especially long-term investors. But, yeah, there's people that trade around the clock.
So when we start out, and, of course, I'm in a cahoots here giving out stock numbers, and
sure,
NASDAQ and Dow updates every single hour. But if I'm saying, like, right now we're down 129, that's from where the market opened? Or including those pre-market trades?
No, that's just since 8 o'clock this morning.
Okay, since 8 o'clock this morning. So the expectation that we were going to open today 300 down was a prediction that was incorrect.
Well, and what happened, Susan, is, as we've been talking about the last several weeks, I think you've got a market right now where people are looking for reasons to do one thing or the other. Now, in the early morning, I think when it was poised, I think when I'd first heard the reports when I got up this morning, they thought it might open up 250 down on the Dow side. But then you had an extremely solid private sector jobs number from ADP that exceeded, I think it was expected to be about 190,000, and it came in at 235 or 240,000. So I think what that did then for all the people that on the other side go, aha, maybe we'll move the other way. So it's really gets into that whole discussion that we've had the last several weeks that, in the big scheme of things, today traders, what Chris is talking about, his friends that do that on the other side, yeah, it matters to them. That's when they make their hay. But I think for people, Chris, that you do investment work for, that you manage money for, it's something that you just don't spend a lot of time thinking about.
No, not at all. There's really no reason at all to ever change a long-term focused diversified portfolio based on the events of really anything that's going on, short-term news item, uncertainty in the short term, because that's when you can really, really get yourself into trouble and get out of position when you didn't need to, and then you're always struggling to try to come back from something like that.
So that means the investment advisors at Kingston Wealth Management are all getting a good night's sleep.
Yeah,
and you should too.
I that's really something I can honestly say, that even for my own self and obviously for my whole career I've been putting money away, and I just never even pay much attention to it, except maybe when I get a quarterly statement, I'll look at it. But at the big, I'm not going to change course. And I think if you follow the advice these guys give, I think that's the way to go. Susan, one of the things we talked about is the jobs number, which kind of propelled things up after the market opened this morning. One of the things that has weighed on the market the last day or so have been the tariffs, and we know that
a trade war could be coming.
President lost another guy last night, and it's been rumored that it was as much over the tariffs situation. Chris, I know people, I've got mixed emotions about it. I mean, there's a part of me that doesn't want to see places like China continue to take advantage of dumping steel on the markets like they've been doing, and there are other countries that do the same thing. But I also understand the other side of the bet that says tariffs can be problematic for other sectors of the economy. So what did you make of the last several days with what's going on with that, and maybe what people can kind of look forward to over the next few months?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing you pointed out, that because we lost the advisor, Gary Cohn, he left, you know, we don't know exactly why, but everybody can pretty much point to, I'm sure he felt the other way.
A difference of opinion.
Yeah, regarding these tariffs. And he's not the only person that thinks that way. You know, this has been a really complex issue that's been debated over and over, different points in academia, in, you know, for all time. I mean, this country has a large history of tariffs that you can point to certain times when we have done that, and it's either had a little bit of a negative impact, a lot of a negative impact, or at some times it's been positive. You know, I'm probably more of the camp that it's not the best thing. I think that despite what we've seen, I know exactly who this is being catered to, and that it may impact them in a positive way, people whose jobs are in the steel, aluminum, metalworking industry. But I think when you look back, we've always done better with more of a free flow of goods, from my perspective, on these certain things. And we've always had pretty much of a trade imbalance for a long time. And we've seen what the market's done over that same maybe 20, 30-year period of time, where even despite, and I can understand we don't want to have, you know, our goods, you know, not being bought at a competitive price. But we're also the largest economy in the world. We have the most dollars to buy and spend other places that just aren't the case for some of these other economies. So it's a very complex issue, and it's not the only thing that drives an economy, you know, or a market. So to think that, okay, well, it's only tariffs that are, we just mentioned another one, job impact, you know,
yeah,
job growth, wage growth. This is too much of a complex system to let one thing think that it's driving.
Yeah.
Driving the train.
But it has affected the markets, and yet we don't know for sure that we will end up in that scenario. Because
we don't.
Unfortunately, we do have a leader who doesn't really announce his plans ahead of time to his advisors and tweets, and then suddenly the whole world reacts.
Well, George Bush did this, I think, back in 2002, and mm-hmm. it lasted about 20 months, and then I think he realized that it probably wasn't in the best interest to continue on with it. It didn't really do all that much impact. It hadn't had that much negative impact over the course of those 18 or 20 months. But I think, if nothing else, he was sending a message. And I think maybe, and again, anybody who has followed Donald Trump the last several years and over his career knows that oftentimes he's posturing for other things. And he may very well flip around on this thing before it's all said and done. There are other ways to punish, to treat these countries that excessively dump things on the market and that undercut prices, which they should not be doing it the way they're doing it. But it doesn't necessarily necessitate having tariffs to address those things. I think he's maybe at that sort of negotiating point right now, so we'll see. But it does have effects, and it does have some impacts on the economy. I know my father-in-law, who's a farmer, 93 years old, I talked to him the other day, and you know, his point was, well, you could see some issues on the, you know, on the grain side of it. You know, countries could make a decision to, you know, to tax that as well. So there's a lot of things to be discovered yet. I think time will tell. But I think it'll get a lot of attention over the next few weeks and months.
Every time I hear someone that is a little more outrageous than we are talking about what's going on in the markets, they seem to emphasize how, you know, this big 1% change and how we're on the edge of a giant correction and so on and so forth. When I'm looking at the numbers, even though we have been going up and down and a little bit of volatility in the last couple of weeks, aren't we still technically playing with house money? Aren't we currently still at the top end of the economy?
That's a good point. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're still, you know, well within 5 to 6% of some of these all-time highs that we've seen, you know, set over the course of last year. I think it was maybe 60 plus new highs that we hit in 2017. And I think a lot of people that point to, hey, are we playing with house money, or are we, you know, poised to go down? You really have to look at it more as a continuum, not a certain point, because you can pick really any point, and relative to that, we are either up or down from some place that we've been to. Now, over the past 90 years, we're extremely higher than we were, you know, 90 to 100 years ago. And I think that that is the overwhelming trend that people need to be aware of. We have a history of moving up in the stock market, and that's mostly based, if we have to point it to one thing, as corporate earnings. As these companies earn more, their stock prices become more valuable. And that's what really, after we drill down all of the news, all of the uncertainty, that's what drives us in the long term. But in the short and intermediate term, it's really anybody's guess on what moves the market on any given day. But to try to anticipate that, we've seen over and over again, you may be right once, but you're going to be wrong way more than you're right. And that's where the mistakes happen.
And unfortunately, right now, you've got a cadre of people out there who are looking for a reason, for some reason, to get conservative. Chris, you had a call not too long ago from somebody who didn't like the way things were going on in politics and didn't like the way things were going on with the debt and thought this might be a good time to get into 100% cash. And you have to have a conversation about that to warn what the ramifications of that could be.
Yeah, there's no shortage of people that I've read, listened to, or even spoke to personally who just know what's going to happen. And God bless them. They may or may not be right. But the reasoning behind it is never really that sound. The reasoning that you would mess up a potential long-term financial plan based on, okay, we think the market's going to go down. Well, the market is going to go down. We don't know when, how much, for how long, but it will go down over time. And it's not always going to be an uptrend. And those are generally the people that, when they want to, say, go to cash, then the next question is, okay, well, when do you get back in? And typically, if we're making a smart decision, that would be at some lower price because we're trying to take advantage. Do you know how many of those people, when prices continue to drop, feel any better about getting into the market at that time? And they generally buy back in once things have recovered, things have gone back up, and then they just cost themselves some money.
Well, as I think we pointed out a week or so ago, when you have a year like we had last year and you've made the mistake because your gut told you one thing, to be out of the market as long as maybe a year, 18 months, there are mistakes that you can recover from. Those are hard, aren't they, Chris? I mean, if you lose an opportunity of a year where the market may be up 20-25%, depending on how you were invested, those are tough things to overcome if you make that kind of mistake.
Yeah, I would go so far as to say if you came out of a mostly growth equity portfolio somewhere October, September of 2016 and didn't get back in, and maybe still aren't back in, you'd be hard-pressed over the course of any average retirement to ever make up what you missed out on. And those are the losses that you don't see on paper because your balance didn't go down, but you're missing out on the impact of what that could and would have grown to.
I apologize again to all of our listeners as well as our friends here from Kingston Wealth Management, John Rudy and Chris Rudy, that we are having some construction done on our building, and it includes actually sawing into foundations and into bricks. And sometimes you hear it through the microphones, and I'm trying to contain it as much as I can. But
it just reminded me that I've got the dental card the other day from my dentist. It says it's time to go see him. So it just reminded me when I get off the air to make that phone call.
So we've just got some unusual noises. I didn't want you to think anybody was having an upset tummy or there was something wrong with your radio or your streaming device. Let me take a short break and maybe they'll finally cut through whatever they're sawing into out there. And we'll be back with more on markets, retirement plans. We'll talk about oil prices and so much more coming up here on WJBC.
WJBC.com.
It is 10:25 here at WJBC, and I'm Susan Saunders, and I'm joined every Wednesday from 10 to 11 with people who understand the ins and outs of money and want you to be able to save some of yours, make it grow, and have a delicious and wonderful retirement. It's a fantasy for so many of us.
Well, it is, but it's a reality that we're all going to go through a retirement years. Most people,
by choice or by force, it's going to happen.
I mean, there's a very few exceptions where people work the entire way through. My father-in-law is one of them, 93, still farming, but that's unusual. Most people, when they get to a certain point, are going to be in retirement. So if you're prepared for it, if you do all the things leading up to it, it can certainly soften the blow a little bit. One of the things I think it's worth commenting about locally is you know, you probably talked about this morning about the State Farm changes and the 900 or so folks that,
right.
that will be gone. You know, those people, many of them are going to be faced, Chris, with some decisions here, depending on their age, depending on whether their financial stability is going to be. I know when that's happened in the past, you've talked to several of them. What kind of things are they going to be looking out for right now? I mean, at least personally, when they make these decisions.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing people need to know is what their options are as far as, hey, if you've been participating in a 401k, a retirement plan of any kind, are you going to be paid out for any outstanding vacation mm-hmm. time? You know, find out, ask questions so you know all of your information. You know, if you're an affected person, if you're going to be facing some changes on what your options are for income now, how am I going to
right.
meet my expenses? But then what can I do to continue saving? Can even if I'm, you know, searching for a new career, looking for a new position.
Which might require, you know, leaving and going to another community, and that can be expensive. People don't roll out that red carpet of moving expenses the way they used to.
Well, that's exactly right. And making sure that, hey, just because you've saved this pile of money that you've done that was more set aside for retirement, that, hey, now you have an opportunity. You either need to maybe move it to an IRA, perhaps.
Right.
But fighting that hesitation to not take too much of that if you don't have to, because there are some circumstances where you can, you know, tap into a retirement plan and avoid a 10% penalty.
It's called hardship, right?
It is. It's called hardship. And
does being laid off qualify?
It in some cases it does. You know, I would say you need to make sure exactly what you're doing with those dollars. You know, I know that if you take it out and if it's to pay for home mortgage, then that would be a qualified expense. But depending on what you use that money for, may or may not qualify. So you always want to do your homework before you make a decision like that. But if you can avoid tapping into those dollars in a significant way, you still have those set aside for hopefully what will be a retirement in not too distant future.
And we had some calls about over the past several years about those in-service withdrawals on 401ks. And I know, again, these are stressful times for folks who are going through that. Fortunately, many of them have been there for a long time and they have some excellent balances accrued, not only in 401k plans, but they also have a pension plan, many of them. So I know folks, we'll give the number at the end of the show off the air, but if they've got questions, Chris, I know you've routinely done those with Kevin, and I know you welcome that for folks maybe out there listening who might want to have you bounce a few ideas off you.
Yeah, certainly. You know, we understand this is a hard time for a lot of people, especially if you're going to be affected by something like this. So even if we can just provide any kind of yep. information, answer some quick questions, you know, we want to be a resource for those in the community.
Yeah, the first phone call is always free. Let's go ahead and give it now.
Yeah. 663-9477 and
663-9477. Yeah. I don't know about you, but I always have to repeat everything three times. 663-9477. Kingston yep. Wealth Management is the name of the company that we have John Rudy and Chris Rudy representing today here on WJBC, and that's very important. I was searching online to see what other people were saying, specifically
right.
trying to get into the mindset of some of these State Farm employees who have been with our with this company for a very long time, valuable members of the community that expected they were going to be here a lot longer, and then all of a sudden they're being told a different direction. I was really surprised how many people were asking sensible questions
yeah.
about how do you roll over or exchange 401ks. They weren't saying how do I make a withdrawal. But Chris, if I may ask for clarification, let's say that you're laid off, your company is giving you your exit package and your instructions. How long do you have to make a decision on where that 401k money is going to go before they just, you know, write you a check and make the decision for you?
Right. So typically, if you have a balance over $5,000, they cannot force you to roll out of that 401k plan. So it can be safe just like it is. You don't have to disturb it if you don't want to. But if you decide, if you get a job with a different company with a different retirement plan, a lot of times those plans will accept rollovers from a previous 401k. You can always roll that over to an individual retirement account, an IRA. That gives you a little bit more control over how it's invested, maybe gives you a little more investment options to choose from. But the number one thing is you don't have to do anything. So you don't have to feel like, hey, while you're juggling everything else that's going on, that's one thing that you can kind of maybe set aside. But, you know, still want to keep an eye on it. But for most folks with, like I say, with a balance, you know, anywhere at or over $5,000, you can just stay right in that plan. You know, the company itself is not going anywhere, so the plan will still be there in place. Obviously, you won't be making those contributions, but you don't have to do anything.
And I'm heartbroken for my friends and family members that are affected by this budget cut. It's going to impact our community
as a whole. It's a huge impact.
But I will say this is also a learning moment to say that if you were expecting beyond a shadow of a doubt that you were going to be at a company until a certain time and you were going to get a pension and everything was just going to be fine and you chose that as a reasoning to not make other savings and investments on your own, this is an example of why that was not the right decision. Yep. It's 10:31. Let's take a look at news, and we'll come back with more from Chris and John Rudy of Kingston Wealth Management right after this. Speaking of the luck of the Irish, I don't know if it takes luck or a combination of luck and good advisement to have a productive savings and retirement plan. But here to help you through that, Kevin Kingston is out today. We have John Rudy and Chris Rudy from Kingston Wealth Management. And part two of our conversation is coming up, why you want a retirement plan in writing. But before we get there, I still need to find out what's going on with oil, because I'm watching my gas prices go up.
Yeah, you know, it going up. But I this morning I stopped on the way in at one of the stations, $2.35 for regular, which is just very, very attractive still. I know we always kid about how champagne and they run sometimes we're really low and you guys are up. We were at $2.59 this morning, so about a 20-25% change. But Chris, in general, there's really not much movement. I think oil's been hovering in that 60 range. I don't know where it is this morning, but not anything really strong to report. We're just, other than the fact that we're producing a lot more as a country.
Yeah, $62 a barrel right now, and obviously that's up significantly from maybe where we were in 2015 at the beginning of the year, but significantly lower than $100 a barrel that we saw many years ago. So I still think on par, we're seeing very affordable prices at the pump compared to what we have seen in the past. And obviously, we have so much more worldwide petroleum products to draw from, but we're also seeing demand increase. We're seeing construction that does take up a demand for some of those oil products. The more plastics that we use for various different materials are really all petroleum based at some point. So the demand is coming back, and oil, like every other commodity, is cyclical. It takes its turn at the top. It takes its turn at the bottom. So it sometimes it's a long cycle, but I wouldn't be surprised to see things go up again in the next few years.
Well, and I don't know if they shut down oil production completely in North Dakota and South Dakota for the winter, but I know they've been closed for like the last month because of a major amount of snow.
And it's more predicated too on pricing. If the price is too low, they're not going to be doing a lot of work excavating. So I think that's part of it too.
Okay. Well, that's what I wanted to know about oil. Let me take a short break, and then we'll come back, and then we'll be all nice and clear skies ahead for why you need a retirement plan in writing. This is just one of the many great valuable lessons you learn when our friends from Kingston Wealth Management stop by. And again, if you're in a money crisis and you've never worked with these gentlemen before, go ahead and give them a call. The first appointment's always free, 663-9477. They can either say, yes, we can help you long term, yes, we can help you just this once, or yes, we can refer you to somebody that might be better for your current needs. We'll be back with John and Chris Rudy after this on WJBC.
Listen to WJBC.com.
Portions of this hour sponsored by Walgreens. There for all your diabetic needs. Stop by today to consult with your pharmacist and get trusted advice and tips about your diabetes medications and testing supplies. I always enjoy the conversations I have here with John Rudy and Chris Rudy. Not that I don't enjoy talking to Kevin too, but he's not here, so we're not going to talk about him because he's diving with fish that I want to see. That being said, from Kingston Wealth Management, I understand how difficult it can be to not only become aware that you haven't done enough for your retirement, but also to start trying to learn about what you need to do for investment and feeling just really lost with terminology and concepts and more. These are gentlemen that will never make you feel silly for asking a question. I appreciate that. So tell me today the answer to this question. It's one you brought in. Why you want a retirement plan in writing? I get it, but why do I need it?
Well,
I thought it already was in writing.
Well,
and I wrote down who gets the money if I'm dead.
Interesting. When you talk about planning, people are kind of vague about a lot of things they do, and savings kind of one of those things. I think people know they got to accumulate a certain amount of money for the future, but when it comes to how much or how to do it, not quite sure how they do that. And I know Charles Schwab did a study that said just 24% of Americans actually commit those plans into writing. And it just kind of lends itself to a few things that we want to talk about that, you know, written plans, anything you write down sharpens the focus, Chris. And I know my dad, your grandfather, used to always say, you know, if it's not written down, it's not going to get done. So, and I think there's some truth to that. But with a planning process, it's one thing to talk about it. But when you do those and you put those plans out there, they're a working document, aren't they? And it's easier to sort of follow, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I think the word we're looking for is accountability.
Yeah.
When we put a plan of anything on paper, we can go back to that every year, every 6 months and say, hey, this is what we committed to. Are we on track for that still? Have we done some things that have maybe taken us off path that we need to make some corrections? Or are we finding, hey, we're in a better position, so maybe we can scale something back? So if you have an actual plan, and it doesn't have to be, for some people it's extremely detailed. For others, it's just a few main points. But to have it written down, having something you can go back to, tangible to hold on to and look at, psychologically just goes a long way for people.
And one of the areas is it kind of helps you figure out, you know, when the sort of the when in retirement planning. When do you go from taxable to tax-advantaged accounts? When do you look at Social Security, taking out Social Security? I know folks that we talked about at the first half hour that are going to be faced with some of these decisions, Chris. When you have those actually articulated in written form, those are things that you can actually go and look at and kind of keep going back to.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think the more that that you're aware of what your plan says, the better it will be for you to make decisions or, as we, I think we talked about first thing this morning, not to make decisions because you have a plan written in place that, you know, it's written for up and down markets all alike, and we don't know when they're going to occur. But if you have it written down, you're much more likely not to react to something that mm-hmm. goes on in the outside world that doesn't concern you directly. It's not a family event. It's not a life event that, you know, would dictate any changes that you would have to make. So it helps you, I think, keep more focused.
You know, I think, Susan, one of the things people have a misconception about is they think, I'm going to go in, I'm going to get this written document, it's going to be real thick, and I'm going to put it in a drawer, and it's something I'm going to have paid for and never really go back to. But I think it's completely the opposite of that, Chris. They're a living document. It evolves. I mean, you change, you know, you justify, modify all the things that have to be done on a regular basis. These things don't belong on a one-time basis where you sit down and you write a check and all of a sudden that goes in a living room drawer for the rest of your life.
Yeah, no. If you don't have the ability to update, react, to change, not to things that are beyond your control, but things that deeply impact you, you know, you never like to see it, but sometimes separation occurs. You may have to welcome in a new family member who's on hard times. You name it. There could be anything that actually directly impacts your life, how you will consume those dollars either before retirement or in it, that need to be reflected in this plan. And it's nothing to get a plan based on, hey, this is the way circumstances are today, and we can hope right. that we can project with some degree of certainty of what you will see over a 10, 20, 30-year period. But we all know we can't do everything. We can't predict everything that's going to happen. So being able to go back, edit, revisit, change the things that you need to, that's what really gives a value to a financial plan.
Yeah, and Susan, two of those areas that really come up a lot of the times are risk tolerance and investment mix. Chris, you can talk about risk tolerance. You can talk about how you want your investments set up. But when you look at how you set it up to start and how you might talk about conditions changing your life, looking at those risk tolerances are something that's a pretty big part of what you guys look at.
You know, risk tolerance is something that I think gets talked about a lot, but maybe not in the right terms. And that's really the way I look at risk tolerance is not hey, what? Let me answer 10 questions, and based on how I respond, that's how you need to be allocated. You know, I think when we started talking about risk, well, what's the biggest risk? Running out of money before we run out of life, losing our purchasing power to the point where we have to change what we want to do in retirement because we can't afford to have that lifestyle. That's the biggest risk. And from there, we walk it back of, okay, well, if we're going to be taking supplemental income, so something beyond maybe a pension or Social Security, if we have planned distributions from things like IRAs, 401ks, at what point of volatility can we accept in that portfolio to make sure that we're not taking too much too quickly? And that really is all part of that comprehensive plan. And, you know, I know lately folks have not been getting a lot in cash savings rates for the banks, But if you have an emergency fund, if you have a sizable portion of cash that you can rely on when things are temporarily down, it allows you to invest the bulk of your money in growth, in equities for future, is which is going to spin off that income as well. So really finding that balance for each individual is different.
And the other thing, Susan, and Chris, you look at, is it helps you tackle that medical expense question. That's probably one of the biggest issues to me. I know I'm 61, going to be 62 here soon. There are issues that you think about that you have to address. And that medical question, Chris, is one that if you're not looking at that and evaluating on a regular basis, boy, those things can change just year to year.
Yeah, we talk about things that you can and can't predict and project. Medical is definitely one of them. Not only your own personal health, your family health, but with the system, the healthcare system, the laws, the changes that are going to take place over the next multiple decades. So one of the ways you can address that is we try to inflate or increase what we think your consumption is going to be by 3.25% each year. Now, you may not find that, hey, our consumption 10, 15 years into retirement is 30 or 40% higher, but it also accounts for those things that you can't predict, like healthcare costs. So it's good to, I guess, conservatively project those expenses increasing every year of your life, even though that may not occur.
And Susan, last one we'll talk about is legacy. You know, we're always talking about things that you can leave for the next generation, for your children, for future grandchildren. Future grandchildren? I'd like to talk about a little bit more about that. You got anything to say about that, Chris?
Well, you got your wish.
Yeah.
Wait. Is there an announcement?
Yeah, there is an announcement.
I'm
going to be a first time. Yes, I'm going to be a first time grandfather.
Aww,
so
recorded yep. radio round yep. of applause. So congratulations, Chris.
Yep. Thank you.
We're excited, but those are things that you pay attention to. You know, when you're talking about legacy and for the future, what are you going to do for those next generations? And again, Chris, those things change a lot. I mean, that's just one example of you know what you've gone through. Just looking at insurances, looking at all those things that you have to adjust.
Yeah, depending on if it's for your own family or for future generations, making sure that things are set up in place to hopefully, you know, if you want to contribute with college, those are always mm-hmm. good yeah. important yeah. things that you want to.
I like that hint towards that Grandpa
to,
there.
I've only found out
you're going to.
Yeah.
But, I think there's no shortage of legacy goals. And for some people, that's family. For others, that's charity, church.
Yeah.
However you want to do that, if that's important enough for you to add as a long-term goal, then that really all factors into how much you can consume yourself, how that needs to be allocated. So it's really just an all-encompassing way to address things.
Yeah.
All right. Now, how many months along are we?
About 3.5.
And how many months into that pregnancy did it take before you started realizing you needed to start a college fund?
I knew that, and I've already I know exactly where we're going. Unfortunately, you can't actually start one until
they arrive.
There's a Social Security number to put on the account application. We will be doing that also.
All right. Well, that's a good conversation to have with a man who understands what it's like to try and put together a legacy as well. Chris Rudy and John Rudy, along with Kevin Kingston, and more available at Kingston Wealth Management. When you want to call and make an appointment, 663-9477. And what's that fabulous website?
It's KingstonWealthManagement.net.
All right. We hope you get lots of great calls today.
Thanks,
Don't
Susan.
Forget when you call in and just say, hey, I heard you on WJBC and I just wanted to call and make an appointment. Securities offered through Valmark Securities, Inc. Member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Valmark Advisors, Inc. and SEC Registered Investment Advisor. Kingston Financial Group, Incorporated is a separate entity of Valmark Securities, Inc. and Valmark Advisors, Inc. and past performance does not guarantee future results.